Oh, I guess it auto recorded. It just started recording.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth Planning and Oversight Committee Evaluation Subcommittee. We are starting at 6:04. You will be able to see our agenda to the left of the screen. And we have myself, Pacolia Manigo, who is the adult representative for District 4, as well as Jorge Velasco, the adult representative for District 5. But we're going to go ahead and get this committee meeting started. Can you scroll down for me, AI?
My name is Al, thanks.
Oh, sorry, Al, thanks. And so...
Go to the next page, Al. Yeah. Next page to the actual agenda, there you go.
Yeah, so we'll be going through the agenda just really quickly. We're done our roll call, or do I need to call Jorge directly?
Feel like we've done it. We've made the introductions yet.
So we're going to go to open forum where attendees are going to be able to testify for 2 minutes. After that, we will talk about adoption of the OFCY continuing resolution for having meetings, POC meetings and subcommittee meetings by teleconference. We'll go to a presentation of the OFCY independent fiscal year 2021-2022 evaluation report. And we have the firm Social Policy Research Associates who will come and do that presentation. We'll move to administrative matters. And then I believe after that, we will close out the meeting.
Yep.
All righty. So let's go ahead and move to open forum. This is an opportunity for members of the public to make any particular comment. You can do such by raising your hands. There is a button at the bottom of your screen that says raise hands. You press that and we will unmute you so that you may testify for 2 minutes. Any members of the public that would like to take advantage of open forum, please raise your hand. Okay.
I see one hand.
Great.
Al, do you want to practice allowing to talk? All right, Donna.
So Donna Moore.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry. Hi, my name is Donna Moore. I'm with Family Support Services. And I attended this meeting and advocating for our program. And I think it's very important to come back and say thank you that you OFCY advocated for us, advocated for more funding to fund our program that was not initially funded. We had a great summer providing services to children in the city of Oakland who had the opportunity to explore and see things or experience things that maybe not in the norm for them. A lot of education, reading, writing, and field trips that were educational. So on behalf of Family Support Services, which is the name of our agency, and the families and youth that I work with in kinship, foster care, and guardianship families, I want to say thank you. I appreciate each and every one of you. And thank you for the work that you did and making sure it happens for the city of Oakland youth and children. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Donna. Are there any other members of the public who would like to speak during open forum? Going once. Going twice. All righty, we will close open forum. Next, we have on the agenda adoption of the OFCY continuing resolution for meeting by teleconference due to COVID-19 public health emergency. Jorge, you want to motion?
I will motion to adopt.
All right, I will support that. And since we are the only two members on this subcommittee, it is so moved.
Before you move on to the number four, Scott, do you have any idea or any feeling of whether or not, you know, this is going to continue, is not going to continue, because, quote unquote, technically the pandemic on a national level, they've declared it over. So is that changing anytime, do you think, for the city of Oakland?
For the virtual meetings?
Correct.
So I think the state is making some announcement in February, and then the city administrator's office for the city of Oakland will interpret that and how it applies to the city of Oakland boards and commissions meetings.
Okay.
So I think there is movement, but what I've been told is that wait until we get more specific direction from the city administrator's office. So.
Understood. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Awesome. Great question. So we have adopted the resolution to continue conducting by teleconference. We're going to go ahead and move to presentation on the OFCY independent evaluation, report. And I will pass it over to the Social Policy Research Associates to do the presentation.
Thank you. Is it okay if I stop your screen share so I can share the presentation?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Okay, can everybody see the, you see the slide okay?
Yes.
Really narrow. Oh, there you go.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. My name is Nika Clark, and I'm here with my colleague, Rachel Australia. As mentioned, we're both from Social Policy Research Associates, and we have been the evaluation and learning partner for OCY since 2014. We're an Oakland-based firm and have been really happy to be able to work in our own backyard for all these years. And I'm really glad that I can be here tonight to go over the last annual report of the 2019-2022 funding cycle. And so as I think everybody knows, this was a difficult year. And I'm really glad to be able to share what programs we're able to accomplish for Oakland's children, youth, and families during this time. And if any of the subcommittee members have any questions, please feel free to chime in as I go through the report. I'll pause at some points for questions, but you can also just unmute yourself and speak up. So before I move on, I just wanted to give credit for this beautiful picture of Oakland youth that we have here. So this is from the Oakland Public Education Fund's Youth Beat program. Okay. And now before I launch into the report, I wanted to just provide an overview of the 9 strategies that OFCY funds. So each program falls into one of these 4 major areas that cover early childhood, student success at the elementary and middle school grades, positive youth development, and in transitions to adulthood. So in all, OFCY invested $17,690,000 in 149 programs in this last fiscal year. And similar to our previous reports in this grant cycle, the report is divided into 3 primary sections. So we begin with a section on OFCY-wide findings. That's the main report covering all 149 programs. Then we have a strategy level summary for each of the 9 strategies, followed by a profile for each program. And those profiles show enrollment, attendance, and survey results for each individual program. So this structure allows us to see what is going on and who's being served at 3 different levels, at the overall fund level, within each of those 9 strategies, and then within each of the 109 funded programs that fall in those strategies. And the program profiles will be available prior to the next POC meeting. And I just wanted to give a sense of all of the different data sources that went into this report. So starting with administrative records, we tracked demographics and attendance for all of the child participants and the adult participants in OFCY's client management system. So that's 18,082 child and youth participants and 2,196 parents and caregivers. We also collected surveys from 5,981 youth, 1,870 parents and caregivers in the early childhood programs, And then also for the after school, the comprehensive after school strategy, we also collected surveys from 637 parents and caregivers. And these surveys focused on both program quality and then also participant outcomes. We also had an online survey for staff that was filled out by 111 of the programs, and that focused on program characteristics, staffing, and partnerships. And then finally, we had the pleasure of engaging with both program staff and with participants in a series of interviews and focus groups this spring. So we talked with programs managers and directors from 25 programs, and we held focus groups with youth and adult participants from 5 programs. Okay. This report and our evaluation in this funding cycle has aligned with the city's transition to a results-based accountability framework, which is also known as RBA. And this aims to investigate 3 primary questions that we focus on throughout the report. First, how much do programs accomplish, which we answer with enrollment and attendance data. Second, how well did they do it, which we answer by looking at if programs accomplished what they projected that they would do. And then also considering participant feedback from the surveys to assess program quality. And then finally, is anyone better off, which is mostly assessed through self-reported outcomes from the participant surveys, and then also looking at other available data points like youth employment. And then at the beginning of the report, I think on page 2, you'll see a table of RBA metrics. And these RBA metrics, just like the report, are divided into those 3 guiding questions. So at the top, you have how much did OFCY programs do? And then at the bottom, you have how well did OFCY programs do it? And is anyone better off? I just want to highlight also that there's different indicators for each of the strategies. And this is, like I said, going to be the framework that serves as the foundation of our report. So we also, though, wanted to learn a little bit more about who OFCY is serving. So starting on page 4, before we get into those RBA questions, we provide an overview of participant demographics. You can see here. So we're pleased to note that over 18,000 children and youth participated in OFCY-funded programs last year. And in light of OFCY's commitment to racial equity, the participation data shows that programs are serving OFCY's target population of children and youth who identify as African American, Black, Latinx, and Asian or Pacific Islander. I also want to point out that these numbers don't actually include all of the preschoolers who were served by the social emotional well-being strategy. Those are students, preschool students who attended child development centers and Head Starts that benefited from the support of mental health consultation through OFCY. And their attendance isn't tracked in CitySpan, so they're not included here. And then in addition, programs in the parent engagement and support and the family resource center strategies, again, that's in the early childhood area, also served over 2,000 parents and caregivers. And I just want to repeat that this information is also available for each strategy in the strategy summaries, and then for each program in the program profiles. And now we will move on to the first RBA question, how much should programs do it, which starts on page 9 of the report. So programs did a lot over the last fiscal year, and as you can see here, enrollment numbers in youth serving programs rebounded a bit compared to last year. Still, programs overall did serve fewer children and youth than they did in fiscal year 1920. We learned from programs that many participants and prospective staff members didn't feel comfortable meeting in person. Agencies faced staffing shortages, in-person meetings in certain venues had to comply with strict public health regulations, which often limited cohort sizes, and students faced significant social emotional learning needs after the isolation and stress caused by the pandemic. So we heard from staff from several programs also that they noted a sense of apathy and disengagement among some students in the program, something that they hadn't seen prior to the pandemic to this extent. So these are some of the challenges that programs were facing, but to respond to these challenges, programs continued to demonstrate creativity and adaptability offering a combination of both virtual and safe in-person opportunities for engagement. They also invested a lot of time in one-on-one connections with children and families, and then also providing more connections to resources and basic needs supports than they had prior to the pandemic. So there's just some of the ways that programs were able to shift in response to the changing needs of Oakland's children, youth, and families. And as you'll see at the in the chart at the bottom of the page, adult enrollment in the early childhood programs was largely unaffected by the pandemic. So we learned from many programs that a lot of parents actually found virtual programming, especially for services like case management, to be pretty convenient. And so there wasn't as much of a dip. Okay, and so here we're looking a little more closely at enrollment in the youth serving programs by strategy. So the blue bars represent fiscal year 21-22, and then gray is last year, and then the white bar is fiscal year 19-20, the first year of this grant cycle. So here we see that comprehensive after-school programs, many of whom are suffering from some staffing shortages in the beginning of the year, and then also summer programs had the largest drop in enrollment. And summer programs were also operating during the Delta variant, which may have caused a dip in enrollment. And then on the other hand, you'll see that high school and post-secondary student success programs and the career awareness programs actually served more youth in 2021 and 2022 than they had in previous years. And then we also looked at attendance. So I just want to point out that after school, the comprehensive after school programs tracked their attendance differently than other programs to align to reporting requirements for their state grants. So we didn't include hours of attendance for that strategy in the report. But excluding the comprehensive after school programs, programs provided close to 900,000 hours of enriching experiences for Oakland's young people. And again, these are experiences that they might not otherwise have access to. And on average, child and youth participants spent about 71 hours in their programs. You can see on this chart on the right that there was a lot of variation in the amount of time that children and youth spent in their programs. And this is because OFCY is designed to fund a variety of different types of programs to serve a very diverse group of children and youth that have different needs, different interests, and the amount of time that they engage varied. Again, I do also want to remind everyone that this doesn't include the comprehensive after school programs, which tend to provide the highest level of service of all the strategies. And so if you're curious about what any of this looks like at the strategy level, again, you can look at this in the strategy summaries as well. And then one more slide on the first RBA question, or actually, sorry, two more. So as I mentioned before, the after-school programs track differently. So they focused on days of attendance instead of hours of attendance. So on average, students who participated in the comprehensive after-school strategy spent 115 out of 180 school days in the program. And average attendance was a bit higher for students in elementary and K-8 schools, where average attendance was 121 days. And then we also found that there was some variation in the amount of time that youth spent in programming across race and ethnicity. So you'll see here that Black, Native American, and multiracial children and youth spent more time in programming than the average participant. I'm going to pause here for a moment before we turn on to the second RBA question, just to see if there's any questions or wonderings.
Okay. So this is excluding the comprehensive after school programs. Will you speak about the comprehensive after school programs? I didn't see that in the full report. Maybe I missed it. There was a lot of information in the full report.
Yeah. So I think this is the only part of the main report that focuses on comprehensive after school, but all this other information is broken out for the comprehensive after school programs in their strategy summary.
Okay. And that these numbers, so for example, students elementary K through eight schools, 121 days out of how many? Is that like
the 180.
180. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to how well did programs do it. So on average, programs met their projected enrollment and attendance hours. So every year, programs work with OFCY to project the number of participants that they anticipate serving and also the total number of hours of service that they plan to provide. So as we see here, on average, programs served 127% of the child and youth participants that they had projected enrolling at the beginning of the year. And on average, programs met the number of hours of service they anticipated providing. And now onto what we believe is one of the most meaningful parts of the evaluation, where we consider participant feedback. So we looked at a few key components of program quality that research has shown is associated with strong positive youth development outcomes in out-of-school programming. These areas that we looked at include creating a safe environment, having activities that youth find interesting and engaging, and connections between participants and caring adults. We also looked at other aspects of program quality and other outcomes as well. These are the ones that we focused on for the RBA indicators. And as you can see on this slide, youth rated programs strongly in each of these areas. 80% of surveyed youth, for example, agreed or strongly agreed that they felt safe in their program. I do also want to note that on the survey, there's a not sure option. And so this doesn't necessarily mean that 15% of the surveyed youth said that they did not agree that they felt safe. They might have marked not sure. Are there any questions related to this RBA question before we move on to is anyone better off?
I do. I have a question around, like, is that a dip in prior percentage, or are we seeing any trend across the years?
I can't remember for the program quality, if there was a dip. I actually have last year's report here. I can look it up. There was a bit of a dip in the outcomes, which we'll get to, specifically in like youth leadership and community connection. I think there was a small dip as well in the program quality areas. We tried to figure out if there was a difference in like the type of youth that were being surveyed to try to figure out like where this could come from, but it was pretty difficult to figure out why there might have been a dip. As I did mention before, a lot of programs that we spoke with talked about just students being less engaged both in school and also in their programming than they had in the past, and having a lot of social emotional learning needs that they hadn't seen prior to the pandemic. That could be part of the explanation.
Awesome, thank you.
I'm taking a look at last year's report. I think it went down a little bit, and it is 92% for safety, 85% for positive engagement, and 85% for caring adults.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, and so now we're turning to our third RBA question, is anyone better off? But before I share the results from the surveys, I want to take a moment to tease out why these survey questions, why we think they're important in showing outcomes. So on the left side of this slide, we have a list of the city's RBA goals that are related to OFCY's mission. And as an example, we have some of the data points that we use to assess programs progress toward one of the city's goals. Are older youth more connected to school or work? And here we see that OFCY programs placed 1,456 youth in internships or job placements, and that 78% of youth in the high school and post-secondary success programs who submitted a survey agreed or strongly agreed that their program helps them feel more confident about going to college. So we just wanted to show this as an example about how the survey questions are tied to the city's RBA goals. Okay. And as I mentioned, the annual youth survey includes questions related to positive youth development, such as increased sense of belonging, increased self-confidence and goal setting, but also these strategy specific outcomes that we include as RBA indicators, such as the outcomes listed here. So we found that 93% of surveyed youth in career awareness and employment support programs agreed that they learned about jobs they can have in the future. And 70% of youth in strategies with an academic focus reported that they learned skills that help with their school because of the program. And then 73% of surveyed youth in summer programs and youth development and leadership programs felt more connected to their community as a result of their program. And as I was mentioning before, the community connection and the support with school also had a bit of a dip compared to previous years. And so we also are very interested in knowing if youth of different ages or identities have different experiences in the programs, or if there are different outcomes for different groups of children and youth. Looking into that, we found that youth in high school and then out of school youth were more likely to report positive outcomes in several of the youth development areas that I mentioned that we investigate, including outcomes like increased self-esteem, improved decision-making, and increased sense of belonging. And we found the same for Black children and youth this year. On the other hand, the survey results showed that among the youth who submitted a survey, those that identified as LGBTQ+ on the survey were less likely to report progress toward improved self-confidence and self-esteem than their peers. I'm gonna pause here again for questions related to this participant outcomes. Oh, I do also want to note that we only went over the youth outcomes, but for the early childhood strategies, we also report on parent and caregiver outcomes, which we'll show a little bit of when we talk about the parent engagement and support strategy.
Thank you.
Okay. So that brings us to the end of the main report. Just wanted to share a little bit about what we learned. So despite the loosening of COVID-19 restrictions in this last year, we heard that the pandemic still continued to pose challenges for programs. So as I mentioned, programs found that many participants and prospective staff members didn't feel comfortable meeting in person. So sometimes programs were short-staffed or they had to change the structure so that they could provide some virtual meetings for participants. Agencies, like I said, were facing staffing shortages. In-person meetings often had to comply with really strict public health regulations that limited cohort sizes. And as mentioned before, there were a lot of social-emotional learning challenges among the children and youth that were participating in programs more than programs traditionally see. And as mentioned before, programs really met this challenge. Some of them used virtual, some used in-person opportunities, some did a mixture, so they could maximize engagement in any way they could. As mentioned, there was a lot more individualized services, wellness checks, connections to resources, and those types of supports to help children and families get through this difficult year. And I think it's also really notable that despite the enrollment challenges that I've been mentioning, programs still were able to serve 127% of the children and youth that they projected serving. And as shown by the survey results, a very large portion of surveyed youth and adults reported that their programs met the quality standards that we want them to, and that participants were achieving the outcomes intended by the programs. Now,
Mika, I do have a quick question. So you mentioned how not as many students were enrolled, but yet 127% of the students were served. So that means there was a greater number of students served, but they just weren't enrolled, or how's that?
No, I think they, especially in the beginning of the year, a lot of programs were facing enrollment challenges, but were able in the by the end of the year to enroll the number of youth that they had projected.
Gotcha. So it was like the startup getting enrolling.
Yeah, and some programs continue to struggle more than others throughout the year. So the 127% is an average across all of the programs.
Understood.
Yeah, and they, as I mentioned before, they served a lot more than they did last year, just not quite as many as in the 2019-2020 year before the pandemic hit.
Right.
Micah, can I go back and ask one quick question that I was curious about? So I noticed that for the surveys, we only had like less than half of youth, little under half of the youth participants complete them, and then it's, you know, 637 parents, give or take, and then parents of caregivers. How do we track over time, like if we're getting that number higher? Because it seems such a small segment of the participants that are completing the surveys, and there's such a rich part of the data picture.
Yeah, some programs did have challenges this year getting more youth to complete the survey. We heard, especially the ones that were more virtual, because they didn't have, you know, the captive audience to, like, pass out the paper survey. So we did get that feedback from some programs. It was just a little bit more difficult. Scott, do you happen to have the number of, you have the last year's report open? I thought I had it open, but I don't see it. You happen to remember how many filled out the survey last year?
It says children and youth, N is 5,147. So it actually increased this year.
It increased, yeah.
And then for parents and caregivers, 690 last year. So,
yeah. And also, the survey is only given to children and youth who are aged 8 and above.
Gotcha.
It's not available for all children and youth.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Now we're going to move on to section B, the strategy summaries. So today we're just going to go over two of the strategy summaries, just to give a little taste and go into a little bit more detail of what some of the strategies are doing. So I wanted to start with some of our youngest participants. So I'm going to share some outcomes from the parent engagement and support strategy, where parents and caregivers with young children, so that's children from birth to age 8, participate in family supports, family engagement activities to promote attachment and positive parent-child interactions. There's a lot of parenting workshops, a lot of play groups, support groups, and also a lot of case management to connect families with resources to provide some stability. And the photo that I have here shows a socially distant session of the Prescott Joseph Center for Community Enhancement's Charles D. Burns pre-preschool program. And just as a reminder, each strategy summary also has its own results-based accountability table, which is located at the beginning of the strategy summary. And then each one also has an overview of demographics and attendance patterns for that strategy. For today's presentation, we're just gonna jump straight into the RBA questions. So starting with, how much did the parent engagement and support programs do? So as you can see, programs in this strategy served 618 children and 1,244 adults. And hours of participation in general in the early childhood strategies tends to be lower than the youth serving strategies. We have a lot of children who are joining their parents and caregivers in, you know, short play groups and other short learning activities that are appropriate for their age. And then there's also a lot of workshop series where they might come for 6 workshops to learn about parenting skills, and then also a lot of one-on-one case management. So it's just a very different structure than the youth programs So hours of attendance does tend to be less by design. And then we do it. So the surveys of parents and caregivers who participated demonstrated that programs successfully created a comfortable and supportive environment, and they worked well with families from different backgrounds. So what we learned in focus groups and also by reading grantee reports is that they did this by centering the needs of parents, taking the time necessary to build trust, to build those connections with parents, and also by making sure that they created a judgment-free space that encouraged openness and allowing parents to feel vulnerable together. And support groups were also spaces for parents and caregivers to both deepen their understanding of parenting and child development, to ask questions of their peers and also of staff, and then also to connect with others who are going through similar challenges. As an example of that, I have a quote here from Oakland Wick Father Cafes. So it says, "When I'm feeling sad or angry, I usually don't know what to do and I end up ignoring my feelings. Coming to group has helped me direct some of those feelings towards something positive. I can bring up what I'm going through in class and staff will listen to me and help me see things from a different angle. This is something I feel I can't do with my wife or my kids because I don't want to burden them." So it's just an example of how programs are providing the supportive environment for parents. All right, and then looking at, is anyone better off? So the early childhood strategies focus on adult level outcomes, including parents' ability to identify what their child needs, connecting families to resources to help meet basic needs, ability, and then also helping parents know how to respond effectively, parents and caregivers to respond effectively to their children. So these are all outcome areas that we know prepare adults and support adults in providing the best care that they can for the children in their charge. And as you can see here, the vast majority of parents and caregivers agreed that they were developing these and working towards these outcomes through their program. And one more quote, and this is from Safe Passages Baby Learning Collaborative Program. This is a parent participant. "We learned how to interact with our children. We learned the importance of spending quality time with our children. This program taught us better parenting skills. I really became a much better mom since I joined this program, and it helped not only me, but also my children and us as a family." That's the parent engagement and support strategy. Also wanted to share a little bit on the opposite end of the age spectrum with career awareness and employment support. So this strategy supports career exploration, work readiness training, on the job experience, skill building supports, exposure to career options, and then also employment for some of the older youth, so mostly high school aged and older. And this photo is from CivicCorps' graduation ceremony this spring. And again, just a reminder that every strategy has their RBA table at the beginning of the report. And in terms of the first RBA question, how much did the programs do? They served 1,820 youth. And those youth spent an average of 103 hours in their program. 80% were placed in an internship or job, and those who did received over $2 million in overall in wages and stipends for the youth. So putting that much money back into the community. And here you can see some of the program quality dimensions that we've discussed before. So feeling safe and feeling that there's an adult who cares about them in their program. For this particular strategy, we don't look at the question of if they're interested in what they do with the program. The beginning of the funding cycle, we had some feedback from the programs that it's not necessarily appropriate in this strategy while they're preparing them to be part of the workforce. So we just focus on these two for or program quality. So you have 94% of you agreed that they felt safe in their program, and 87% agreed that there was an adult who cares about them at their program. And in our focus group with participants from the Lao Family Community Development's Oakland Youth Industries Exploration Program, we heard that staff created a caring environment by checking in on the participants and supporting their interests. And youth in the focus group also reported that staff helped place them in internships that matched their interest. And they just felt that staff genuinely cared for them and were looking out for them. And to demonstrate that, we have a quote from one of the participants. "When I'm in the program, I feel like I belong a lot and that I'm very welcomed there. Because connecting back to what we said earlier about how supportive the staff were, I feel like it's like a family there. It's not an office. It's more like a family where everyone supports each other." And then moving on, is anyone better off? Here we have a few examples of our key outcomes for this strategy. So we found that 93% of youth in these programs agreed that they learned about jobs they can have in the future. 92% agreed that they learned what is expected of them in a work setting. And 91% agreed that the program taught them how to get along with others in a work setting. And then we have another quote here, and I thought this was really aligned to one of the other survey items, so I thought I would just include it also on the slide. So 92% of youth agreed that because of this job, I learned new skills that will help me get a job. And again, this is from the Lao Family Community Development's Oakland Youth Industries Exploration Program. So with the Lao family, with finding jobs, their training, with doing cover letters, doing interviews and resumes, that really helped me in my real professional life in finding jobs. So I really like the skills that they have set me with, and they're useful in my day-to-day life now. Okay. Any questions about the strategy summaries before we quickly talk about the program profiles? Okay. So as I mentioned before, the program profiles were not available yet, but they'll be available before the next POC meeting. And I just wanted to give to show like what's included in the program profiles. So the first page shows the results-based accountability indicators for each of the three guiding questions for the relevant strategy. As you can see here. And this is for the career awareness strategy, I believe. Yeah, for the career awareness strategy. And then on the second page, we have an overview of participant demographics for the program. And then for the career awareness strategy, it also shows information related to job placements for that program. So you can see we've got race, ethnicity, attendance hours, age, gender, and then zip code of residence. And then finally, on the third and fourth pages, we have a detailed survey results. On the left side is the program survey results, and on the right is a comparison to the strategy as a whole. And then the survey questions, as you can see here, are organized by the outcome dimension that they're related to. And then the bar charts at the top show an aggregated outcome score. So the third page is general youth development questions, and then the fourth page are the strategy specific questions. Pause here again for any questions.
And you're going to put that in the next PLC package for us. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So then, so at the next PLC meeting, what we can expect is kind of you all to do this similar presentation to the overall PLC, but also we'll have access to the program specific information.
Yes.
Okay. Jorge, do you have questions?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay. I'm wondering if we should see if there's any questions from attendees.
Okay.
Yeah, we can take any comments. So if anyone wants to make a comment or question, you can raise your hand. And I'm seeing none thus far.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much for being here to make this presentation to us. I don't believe, is there any action that we need to take tonight?
No, it's just any feedback that you might have to SPR on how they present to the full POC. So if there's any things that you think would be more beneficial in the way they present to the full POC in December, at that point, the full PLC will need to take action to approve the evaluation report so that it can move forward to the City Council.
I don't have any, any notes of the differences between the years would be really helpful. And then Scott, I'm thinking of the last time we went to City Council, what potentially might be questions that come up. And I feel like, I feel like there was a question around opportunity to for City Council members to give additional feedback on the evaluation tools and questions moving forward. So we should just remember that that came up during the last presentation to the committee. I want to say
Life and Enrichment.
Thank you. I'm like, what's the name of the committee? So I do remember council member Carol Fife wanting to give feedback on potential evaluation questions. So that's just something we should just be prepared for that might come up again. But that's not PLC, but just that we know. And I know we talked about, you know, looking at the evaluation for the new strategic plan. So we should just be prepared to answer that piece. Yep. Okie dokie.
I also want to say that all the reports that were in the meeting packet, we should have plastered draft all over them because they're still,
in progress.
Yeah, so there might be some still quality control happening as SPR continues to review the documents. So they may change slightly as we post for the December POC, just a heads up.
Okay, thanks for letting us know. Okay, well, thank you again so much for your presentation, Micah and Rachel, and thanks to all of your associates and folks at Social Policy Research.
I also want to say that this is SPR's last presentation to our POC, at least for the foreseeable future. They will not be our evaluators for 22-23. So yeah, it's been 8 years. I can't believe it's been that long so quickly. I think they thought it was a good time to exit the relationship and get a new evaluator on board to sort of get some fresh eyes on how we evaluate our programs. But I do want to thank Rachel and Micah and the whole SPR team that we've worked with over the last 8 years. It's been a pleasure. So
yeah, thanks, Scott. It's been really meaningful, very meaningful work for us.
Oh, it's not goodbye yet. You still gotta come back in December.
Not yet.
Well, appreciate being able to work with you and appreciate the presentation being really clear. I don't know, Jorge, if you have any other feedback or comments.
No, the only feedback that I will have is that there was reference to an appendices, and I didn't see that attached anywhere.
Yes, so, thank you. Yeah.
But I think because it's still kind of going through the QA/QC process, that's why probably it wasn't there. But just to make sure that that's in there, I was looking for it. I was like, uh-oh. So yeah, look forward
thank
to seeing
you. That. Yeah.
All right. Al, do you
the only other thing I wanted to add, just so that you all know, is that even as they bring on a new evaluator, we are certainly happy and intend to be able to be there to help onboard them onto this process. It's a very difficult and comprehensive evaluation with a lot of moving parts. And we know that it's a hard thing for anybody to jump into, just, you know, cold turkey. And so also recognizing that they'll be jumping in kind of in the middle of, you know, of an already moving funding cycle. We just wanted to let you know we're not leaving you high and dry, even if we're taking a break from it.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks for letting us know.
Actually, Scott, who's coming on board to fulfill that role, or is there going to be like an RFP, RFQ kind of process?
I think that could be the next topic of discussion. Al, do you want to put up the agenda again?
Yeah, I can. I have it on my screen, but we're going to go ahead and move. Thanks. We're going to close out on item 4, move to administrative matters, general announcements.
Yeah.
Scott?
Yeah. So this is sort of an unusual situation we're in. We usually have an evaluator on board, but given our sort of staffing challenges at OFCY and coming out of a very extensive RFP review process, and then, you know, Mike departing soon thereafter, we weren't able to get out a RFP or RFQ for an evaluator. Then at the direction of HSD interim director Estelle, she really wanted us to do another sort of human services / Department of Violence Prevention wide professional or RFQ for professional services. So it's a lot of different professional services, including evaluators. It was released about a week or week and a half ago with a statement of qualifications due on November 18th. So at some point, Pecolia and Jorge, I would love to involve you guys in the at least the interview process. So once we read and score all the SOQs, and maybe we'll invite one or two or three, depending on how many people apply, that can do sort of the work that OFCY requires. And like Rachel said, it's sort of a big lift because we have so many different strategies with so many different age groups and program models and all this stuff. So it's really hard to get a single evaluator that has competency in all those areas. Mm-hmm. So, but we are trying to do that. Then one other announcement I wanted to make was, I also wanted to share with the evaluation subcommittee that the city council actually gave the human services department an additional $500,000 to sort of beef up our evaluation. And they mentioned OFCY as well as the community housing department, but I think it was also overall. So it wasn't just limited just to us and community housing, but I think there is real push. And, you know, Pocolia, maybe you sort of referenced it where, you know, council members had certain questions about our evaluation model. And, you know, I wasn't at those meetings, but from what I heard secondhand, I think there's more push to have more outcomes-based data outside of just self-reported youth surveys or self-reported parent surveys. They really want to know, are we really moving the needle for, you know, different groups in Oakland and different populations in Oakland? So I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. I know we're still trying to hire a children youth services manager as well. I think Estelle is in the process, and I'm hoping that person will be on board as well to help make the decision on the new evaluator. So that's sort of the update on our evaluation status.
Okay. Thank you for that update. I definitely hope that we are moving, you know, forward toward staffing up, because I feel like part of where that push from the council is coming from is because it's a general public question around why we see such an increase in violence with such a deep investment, or what people consider to be a deep investment in children and youth services, and whether we can make an argument both within city council as well as to voters for additional funding, right? And so when you get to that particular level of you know, justification, some of our data just doesn't answer, like, you know, some core questions. And I think also the connection to other departments and their data, you know, starts to surface. And so it doesn't shock me that council gave more money for evaluation, but it's one of those double-edged swords that we should just be aware of, that people desperately want to find the connection points of, like, if we invest in more children and youth services, will that prevent violence, or, you know, where to put the most investment to get the biggest impact. And I think that, you know, to the degree that it's possible, it's hard to have that conversation when we don't have leadership across every department to be able to lead a collaborative effort on that. So for folks who are on the call, members of the public, I think it's important for us to say, like, we do need to prioritize helping to do the outreach for open positions, and fingers crossed that any staff that are already in the pipeline and approval process move through and stick through. But I definitely just wanted to mention that, because I think it your leadership has been great, Scott, but I know you're months on without all that is necessary to run this amazing work.
I would love to staff up. Yeah, it's you know, not only to do the operational things, but just to have thought partners as we think through these things, you know. So
yeah, I hear you.
I would say one thing about just moving, you know, having impact and outcomes is, like, I feel like a conversation I've had with various evaluators, including SPR, is it's really hard to show causation, you know, like a causal relationship, that just because that youth spent 100 hours in that program, that led to X results, you know? And I think we're all trying to figure out, yeah, what is the best investment of these funds, not only OSUI, but across the board, I guess, across the city. But I guess part of my fear is that, you know, I'm not sure if we will get there in terms of an evaluation report, like, to show causal relationships. And it might be correlated, you know, if there's, like, national or city trends that are trending positively, then, hey, look, we're doing great. Right. And if there's, like, national or local trends that are trending negative, then we're like, oh man, none of these programs work. And, you know, like, so I don't know, it's a fine balance to try to, like, figure out what is causing positive outcomes and what can we hold OFCY funded programs for. So I'm still wrestling with it.
Yeah. And we may be wrestling with it for a while. So I don't want us to shortchange ourselves. I just think it's important to know where it's coming from. And I was there for that conversation. And I'm there listening to other conversations. So as we kind of bring on the new evaluator or evaluators and, you know, release the request for qualifications, I think it's important for folks to be aware of, like, what is the demand, as well as what the transition might need to look like as council is trying to seek answers, right? So, okay. I'm just going to also add an announcement, Scott. We didn't say this, but for folks who are in attendance, we are also still looking for members of the community to join as commissioners on the Policy Oversight Committee. So if you are interested, you can go to our website and check out the vacant positions on the commission, so that maybe you want to be one of us here representing as an adult, or if you know an amazing young person who could really benefit from or have amazing opinions about what should happen with children and youth services in our city, can join the commission. So please check that out. Always want to plug that. Other than that, are there any other announcements, Scott, that
I don't. Just the next full POC meeting will be the first Wednesday of December, or that's when it's scheduled for, and we'll make a big push to get a quorum, because hopefully we'll get people there to take action on this evaluation report.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. All righty. Well, I think that wraps us up. Thank you, everyone. I will adjourn us at 7:04.
Thank you, Ella. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a good night. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
You want to stop the recording?